Good afternoon, everyone. And welcome back to another exciting episode of Red Pill News Live. Hope you guys are having a great day. Thank you very much for joining us. Ooh, Leanne63 says P. Diddy's house was just raided by DHS. Are you kidding me? That's spicy. I'll have to look that up. Yeah, look at that. All right, well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. We're also going to talk about the breaking news in relation to President Trump's case in New York, cases in New York. I made this thumbnail much earlier in the day, and then, of course, breaking news happens. It's good. It's all good news for President Trump. If you haven't yet, please do me a favor. Hit the like button. Hello to all of my friends over there on Pilled and, of course, over there on Rumble. Keeping the chat comfy. Thank you to CyberX Speed for dropping that cookie. Your letter went out today. Also, we're going to give a big thank you to Lightspear, who sent me a journal. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. We've got a lot to discuss. And then we've got a big show to prepare for tonight on Baseless Conspiracy. So the show will be only 2 hours today. So sit back, relax, grab your popcorn. We're going to be right back after this. So recently, I've told you guys about a breakthrough new anti-aging remedy that I've been using that keeps me energized all day long. I just take a teaspoonful of C60 Evo olive oil in the morning, and I notice better mental focus, flexibility, and physical endurance. Now, it's rare to feel improvements this quickly. I also end up sleeping deeper at night, so it's really helpful. Their peptide and ESS60 hair and lotion renewal formulas are exceptional because they really work. And C60 Evo's lab has been manufacturing this Nobel Prize-winning miracle molecule for 32 years in their Houston, Texas, Patriot-owned lab. ESS60 is the upgraded version of the Carbon-60 molecule. It's specifically made for both people and pets. It's a potent and effective way for people's lives to be improved all around the world. So maximize your health and enjoy noticeable results with C60 Evo organic edible oils, skin serums, and pet products. You can buy with confidence from C60 Evo, and you can use my personal code for a discount at checkout. Simply go to c60evo.com/redpill78. And then when you're there, use code redpill78 for an additional 10% off your entire order. Once again, that's c60evo.com/redpill78. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right. Good afternoon. Welcome back. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. I sincerely appreciate you. I thank you, as always, for joining me Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern right here on Red Pill News, which is hosted on my channel, Red Pill 78. If you guys don't yet, you can also follow me on all of the relevant social media platforms at RedPill78. And if you don't find me there, well, then it's probably not worth being there. Maybe not. I don't know. I want to jump right into this Sean P. Diddy Combs stuff because, as I made you aware a couple of weeks ago, there have been some major claims against Sean Combs and, of course, the people that he has surrounding him. Reports of sexual abuse, rape, sodomy, forced oral copulation, also drugging, and, you know, just the list goes on and on. So I am actually not surprised for Leanne to bring this to our attention. Let me see. Check this out. The feds have raided Sean Combs' properties in Los Angeles and Miami. They did a bi-coastal raid on him all at the same time. So federal agents raided properties associated with Sean Combs. They were authorized to search by warrants that were issued in Manhattan federal court. A source familiar with the situation told NBC that three women and one man have been interviewed in New York by federal authorities in connection to a probe involving possible sex trafficking, also sexual assault, the solicitation and distribution of illegal narcotics and firearms related to Combs, who was also known as Diddy. Now, Leanne said it was DHS. I saw that it said that there were federal agents present. in Los Angeles. It was a home that is associated with his film company. Now, this article doesn't know the exact reason. Apparently, they didn't get the memo, but they can read between the lines and suggest that it is allegedly related to sex trafficking. HSI agents. I don't know what HSI stands for. I'm assuming that is some sort of local California. Oh, I'm sorry. Homeland Security Investigations, which is, I guess, a branch of Department of Homeland Security. And New York executed law enforcement actions as part of an ongoing investigation with assistance from HSI Los Angeles, HSI Miami, and or local law enforcement partners. We will provide further information as it becomes available. I don't know why I'm yawning. So, very interesting stuff. I can't say I'm super surprised after all of the claims that were made against him and, of course, all of the alleged crimes that he has been engaging in for quite some time. I wonder if they're going to get him for the murder of Tupac. That would be the ultimate, wouldn't it? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of different musical artists who are out there today who have said that P. Diddy did some unsavory things with them. I don't know what's going on today, guys. I'm just, like, not feeling the energy like I normally do. All right, so let us begin with a couple of things that I missed over the weekend just because we were doing the other shows. First of all, Mike Benz, who you may know, is being interviewed by Patel Patriot tonight at 7 p.m. over there on Badlands Media. He said in an interview just this past week that Hunter Biden was actually involved with the CIA in Ukraine, and it was this involvement that led directly to the lies of the Trump-Russia collusion story and, of course, the assault on Donald Trump by the deep state. So Mike Benz is being labeled as a deep state expert. I really can't tell you exactly who Mike Benz was in the administration. From what I understand, he came in sort of late, but still, you know, he was actually officially in the Trump administration. I know that he was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. He's been going on kind of the interview circuit. He's been on War Room several times. And after I have a chance to look into a little bit more about him, I was going to see about having him on the show as well. But see, Mike Benz reported that the CIA was heavily involved in Ukraine. We knew that one. Thank you very much for confirming. This was actually in response to a report from the New York Times. This is, of course, the article that came out revealing all of the CIA bases, basically showing that the CIA was running the Ukraine security services, which, of course, is totally natural in a satellite nation like Ukraine. It's basically the long arm of the deep state. So Benz released a video clip where he suggested that Hunter Biden was advancing a specific CIA project in Ukraine, and that project was designed to swing natural gas markets towards NATO and away from Russia. Now, of course, since he was working at a high level with the deep state itself, that would tell you everything you need to know about why he is untouchable. Let's see if there is a clip here. Yes, there is.
You knew how fragile.
But we're going to have to get past this commercial. Thank you, Donnie.
I just have to break this down in a video to make it perfectly plain and clear to people what's happening with Hunter Biden and the CIA. Why was I saying a year and a half ago that the reason Hunter Biden is untouchable by the Justice Department is because he was part of a CIA operation, multiple ones, actually? You have to understand, like, what's going on here. Okay, so let me just give you, like, a dozen data points on Hunter Biden, CIA. So the first thing is Hunter was on the chairman's advisory board of the National Democratic Institute, the NDI, okay? The NDI is the DNC wing of the National Endowment for Democracy, which is the top CIA cutout used in our tens of thousands of NGO swarms. NED ranks number one. It was created to be a NGO affiliate of the CIA. It was created to do overtly what the CIA was doing covertly and getting in trouble for doing in the 20th century, created under the Reagan administration in 1983. And there's something called the NDI for Democrats and the IRI for Republicans, the CIA wing of the Republican Party. And they both split spoils, basically on U.S. foreign policy jobs that the CIA orchestrates. You don't get to be part of the chairman's advisory committee of the NDI unless you are CIA linked or CIA vetted. It is a CIA. It's a gongo, you know, except it's a Congo, if you will. You know, NGOs, government organized, non-governmental organizations. This is a CIA organized non-conco, a CIA organized non-CIA organization. Okay. It's the CIA. Okay. And he's on the chairman's advisory board of that. And oh, by the way, when he was at Burisma, who was the other person on the Burisma board from the U.S. there? It was Cover Black, who had spent 30 years in the CIA. Cover Black was Mitt Romney's Sherpa to the intelligence community during his presidential run in 2012. And you know what? Mitt Romney's on the board of the IRI, who I just mentioned, the International Republican Institute, the CIA cutout counterpart to the NDI. Okay. Burisma was a CIA operation. Okay. Let me say this again. Burisma was a CIA operation. Okay. So was Naftogaz. That's the public and then respectively the private and public natural gas companies there. There were a couple other private ones in addition to Burisma. But the CIA was trying to break down Gazprom and swing the gas market from Russia to NATO. Okay? They've been trying to do this for 16 friggin' years. It's been an in-process CIA State Department Pentagon project for 16 friggin' years.
Let me just point out, pretty interesting that Hunter Biden would be part of this initiative. I absolutely believe everything Mike is saying. But it's more ironic that Joe Biden comes into office and then almost forces the various countries of the world into the arms of Gazprom and Russia because, you know, essentially he's cutting off domestic oil production and refinement. He's stopping us from creating our own fuel. We have to get it from other sources. And obviously that is leading to a big gap in the natural gas and oil market out there. Kind of strange.
They were trying to capacity build Burisma and shift its board to make it U.S. controlled. They're doing the same thing simultaneously with Naftogaz, the feeder that Burisma feeds into. You can even read about the power struggle between George Soros and Vladimir Putin for control over Naftogaz, the state-owned titan that has been the privatization prize of the IMF. That is, that was part of the reason that we overthrew the Ukrainian government in 2014 is to privatize those assets because we knew that we were going to be cutting Russia off. So Western stakeholders wanted to profit from this trillion-dollar windfall if Russia could be kicked out of the European energy market. This is common activity for the Central Intelligence Agency, which was created by corporate lawyers in 1947 as its first class, okay? The corporate espionage side of the CIA operation here has geopolitical dimensions. If you kill Russia's energy exports, you kill their military, which means you kill their ability to run air defense systems to Syria. You kill their ability to run small arms to sub-Saharan Africa to oppose, you know, U.S. control over lithium and cobalt and copper and aluminum and gold and oil and gas there too. This was a long-range CIA project where Hunter Biden happened to be ass deep in exactly the number one geopolitical target of what the CIA was doing under the Obama administration, which is trying to kill Russia's energy exports. So meanwhile, you had this endogenous Ukrainian gas company that Hunter's on the board of. And by the way, who's Hunter's dad at the time? It's you know, Joe Biden, the vice president in charge of the Ukraine portfolio, but Joe Biden spent 30 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 10 years rotating between chairman and ranking member. That is the coordinating wing of the Senate with the State Department and the CIA, okay? It's specifically Central and Eastern Europe. Joe Biden was hugely involved in the Yugoslavia operation in the late 1990s and breaking that up, which again was a CIA job, okay? That's why you have to understand the structure of the blob. Whenever you see the State Department, the CIA is there and the Pentagon are there, and you just don't see it yet. Whenever you see the CIA, the State Department, and the Pentagon are there, you just don't see it yet. Okay? It was like – and even British
– All right. I am absolutely on board with everything Mike is saying. That's exactly the way it works. I mean, how long have we been saying it? The CIA is the deep state. They are the tentacles of the octopus working in the background every single time. There's no more left? Give me that, I guess. Sorry, I need something a little stronger. That coffee is just not cutting it. But yes, I'm looking forward to seeing the conversation between John and Mike. Certainly should be interesting. All right, so a couple of other things. First of all, the CEO of Boeing is resigning. Does it have something to do with the murdered whistleblower? Well, certainly it has something to do with the whistleblowing activities and, of course, all of the trouble that Boeing has had very recently. Not the least of which is the terrifying ordeal that the passengers on the Alaska Airlines flight had when the door ripped off the plane, removing a large piece of the fuselage, essentially leaving the inside of that cabin completely open. I believe we actually have a little bit of audio from the pilot, but most importantly, it appears that the FBI has sent letters to the passengers on that plane, making them aware that they may likely be the victims of a crime. Now, is that a crime of intent? Is it a crime of omission, meaning that they just chose not to do the necessary safety requirements that are, you know, generally by law required to put people up in the air safely? Well, no matter what, you can bet that it's going to be continued bad news for Boeing. This is another blow to the once great manufacturing giant. And of course, the passengers who are taking Boeing flights right now are not feeling too safe about going up in the air on one of these giant, death-rattling booby traps that will undoubtedly murder, kill, hurt, and maim more people. Are we going to hear about it, or is it going to be stuffed under the door? Well, the passengers on that Alaska Airlines 1282 flight in Portland, Oregon on January 5th all had quite the scare of their lives when the door was ripped off at roughly 10,000 feet. It's a crime of DEI hiring. I think that's probably something we can point to. But I also think it's a crime of greed, because if we listen to the claims of the whistleblower himself, it was more about saving as much money as possible and not spending as much money as possible. And so they would just ignore safety checks. There certainly was the consideration of people who had just gotten jobs there out of the fry section at a Burger King. He did mention that. But I tend to think that it also has a lot to do with these corporations just trying to keep as much money of their as possible, and then passing the dangers and, of course, the costs onto the American people. So the 737 MAX 9 broke up in midair. Thank God the pilot was able to get them to the ground. This was a female pilot, by the way, and although she sounds just a little bit nervous in the recording, she did okay, and she was able to get them down to the tarmac. So the FBI office in Seattle has now sent a letter out informing the passengers of this plane that they are the possible victims of a crime. The FBI is having an ongoing criminal investigation into the incident that occurred on January 5th. And if it was an intentional sabotage of the plane, certainly the FBI is going to figure that out. They're going to trace that back, because this is the kind of thing that's just bad for business. And what is the FBI really about? Business. They're about business. They're not really about keeping America safe at the end of the day. They're about their own interests. And I would imagine that there are probably a fair number of FBI agents and executives that have stock in Boeing. So this is bad for their own personal portfolios. Tell me this, guys. If you had to fly someplace and there was no choice but to fly on a Boeing aircraft, would you still do it? Give me a one in the chat if you would bite the bullet and fly on a Boeing, or give me a number two if you would stay home or choose a flight on another day, maybe go to a different airport if all you could get was a Boeing flight. I'd be interested to know. So this letter was made public when one of the attorneys representing a number of the passengers spoke to the Seattle Times. Ooh, yeah. Looks like most people, but nobody, not a single one would fly on a Boeing. Ooh, Mohab. Oh, Crystal says, my parents are flying all the way to Japan in a Boeing in 13 days. Gosh, that's, yeah, definitely pray for him. Jay Varnell, one every day. I guess you fly every day, bud? Dawn and Johnny, they would fly. Wow, not many people would fly on a Boeing. Ooh, Cyber already canceled. He planned a trip to Japan on a Boeing in 6 months. Yeah, it's It's too late. Drink heavily. The only problem with that is that I saw this video over the weekend of a guy. He was like drunk and passed out on an airplane, and he lit a cigarette in his sleep. I don't know how he got the lighter through TSA. Maybe he had pre-check and he was able to get through. But yeah, so 99% of the people would not fly in a Boeing, and I don't blame you personally. All right, so this lawyer spoke to the Times, the letter read, "As a victim specialist with the Seattle Division, I'm contacting you because we have identified you as a possible victim of a crime. This case is currently under investigation by the FBI. A criminal investigation can be lengthy an undertaking, and for several reasons, we cannot tell you about its progress at this time." Another attorney who represents passengers on the flights said that he welcomes the investigation by the Department of Justice. He says, "We want answers, we want accountability, and we want safer Boeing planes. The DOJ brings a lot of leverage to our litigation. Sounds like they are already actively suing Boeing in civil court." It was reported earlier this month that this criminal investigation had been opened by the DOJ back in January, and that included interviews with the pilot and the air crew. The department reportedly also sent subpoenas to possible witnesses, perhaps people on the ground, maybe people in the Boeing manufacturing plant. But a federal audit of Boeing, and this is how it goes a little bit farther than just DEI, revealed that there were over 30 failures in the company's operations. Boeing had 97 points of non-compliance on their audit, and they outright failed on 33 of those aspects. 56 points of the audits were passed. That is not anywhere near what you need to be able to fly one of those things safely. They are, of course, a company that manufactures the plane themselves, but there is a different company that manufactures parts of the fuselages for the MAX line. That's Spirit AeroSystems. Now, they've been audited as well. They had 13 audit points, and they failed over half of them. So they're not doing so well either. Now, the administrator for the FAA said that when he took a trip to Boeing's manufacturing facilities, he said that he believes there are issues around the safety culture at Boeing. Well, no shit, Sherlock, do you think? Obviously, there's plenty of issues in the safety and manufacturing of Boeing. I would say that there is a lot of issues in terms of leadership. There's a lot of issues in terms of just the general day-to-day operations. Again, looking back at the claims of that whistleblower who is now tragically no longer alive, he made it pretty clear that this was a culture of unsafety there at the entirety of Boeing. When he brought that information forward, they immediately tried to suppress it, and they tried to essentially shove him out of the company and then ruin his life. And, you know, maybe allegedly they murdered him as well. So Boeing, for their part, says that they are working to change their priorities. Thank you to Ann. I appreciate you, Ann, over there on Ko-Fi. Corin says, your new nickname, Zach Yonstein. Yes, it could be. I don't know why I'm so tired, man. I was like fine all day. I also need to say thank you to Spray and Pray. I missed a cash app from you, buddy. Also, Matthew Gibson. Thank you very much, Matthew Gibson. Appreciate you. Karen Cook, she said, keep on trucking. And then Laura Sellers said, thank you, Zach, for doing what you do. God bless. Thank you very much, you guys. I appreciate all of you. So Boeing says they're changing things, but obviously it's just a little bit too late. We can tell from the unofficial survey in the chat that I think the damage is already done. This is the kind of issue that can ruin a company and can force them to have to sell off, perhaps be absorbed by another manufacturer. Who knows exactly what the plan is here going forward, but Boeing is going to have to do a lot to bring Americans back to these airlines. And, you know, I mean, let's just say that is if the airlines themselves don't get rid of Boeing because they no longer trust in their product. Seems like their main push has been getting machines out, not worrying about just how safe they are or how well they're put together. Clearly, that is the wrong path to take. Jim Kyle says it's all about money, sacrifices, and safety be damned. Yep, you are absolutely correct. It is all about money. All right, also over the weekend, this terrible attack that took place in Moscow. This actually happened mid-afternoon Thursday, but I didn't have any information about it when I went live. And then, of course, more information came out over the weekend. So there was an attack at a Moscow concert venue, and this concert venue was called Crocus City Hall. It was literally packed with people. And apparently a group of three or four, I believe it was four at the end when they finally caught up with them, they came into the concert hall and they were carrying rifles. I don't know if they were, you know, just like jazzed up or if they were actual military rifles. But these were not native Russian speakers. The attackers came in and they shot dozens and dozens of people. There was approximately – what was the number? Gosh, I can't tell you what the number is. I'm sure that it says it here in one of these. There we go. God, was it over 100? No, it couldn't have been. Well, I'm sorry, guys. I don't have the number right in front of me. I should have known this. But regardless, dozens of people were shot. They set the arena on fire. There was video of it that went all over X. It was all over Rumble as well. And this is not the kind of stuff that I like to watch, so I'm not going to go ahead and pull it up. But there was some confusion about who these guys were at the very beginning. I think that as soon as everyone saw it happen, they said, I guarantee you the CIA is involved in one form or another. Now, is it a coincidence or is it merely a bit of foreshadowing? But the U.S. Embassy in the weeks before this attack had suggested that all U.S. citizens avoid concert venues because of an imminent terrorist attack that was coming. Now, it's been reported that Vladimir Putin ignored those warnings coming from the U.S. embassy and said, you know, we've got this. Don't worry about it. But what actually happened is Maria Zarkova, the official spokesperson, I believe for the Ministry of Defense, she put a statement out and said, if there's any terrorist attacks at a concert venue, we're going to hold the United States and Ukraine personally responsible. Now, almost immediately, as soon as this attack took place, the U.S. State Department stepped forward and said it wasn't Ukraine. And of course, the Ukrainian intelligence services are now blaming, well, at the time, over the weekend, they blamed special forces working for Putin as organizing this attack on this concert venue outside of Moscow. Now, this seems patently ridiculous to me. Not to say that a false flag is not something that the Russian government would be above doing, but this is not the kind of thing that they need. The Russian people are unified. They just reelected Vladimir Putin by an overwhelming margin. The country is unified right now against the West and against NATO and, you know, trying to win back Ukraine in some form or another, or at least to liberate the people of Ukraine who no longer want to be part of the Western NATO-aligned government. So the fact that the United States would say immediately it isn't Ukraine, and the fact that the Ukrainians would immediately say it was the Russians, I think it goes to show you that they were doing a little bit of cleanup at the very end. So nobody believes that it was not the Ukrainians. And nobody believes that it wasn't the CIA. But immediately after that, ISIS stepped forward and they took credit for this terror attack. Well, I'm sorry, 115 are dead, and there could be even more now. Now, these guys looked vaguely like they could have been Muslim. I don't know. Little difficult to tell. They were dressed in civilian clothes. They were not dressed in any sort of overt military gear. And we know that, you know, terrorists are not always the most organized. Generally, when we see people who are, you know, heavily militarily trained, that tends to be a state-sponsored event. But these guys were caught, okay? And that's where the kicker comes in, because they were trying to escape to, well, if you guessed Ukraine, you would be right. And the other funny part about this is that ISIS – of course, ISIS. ISIS, the very organization that Barack Obama announced to the world that we were training our new ISIS forces. We were training ISIS to take on the Syrians. And now here we are all these years later, and ISIS is the dominant terrorist force in the world. So again, this circles right back to the CIA and to Ukraine. Now, some brutal stuff happened to these guys. You know, I've done a little bit of research into the treatment of terrorists. It doesn't happen all that often in Russia, but it has happened. Seems like when the Russians are attacked by people that they see as brothers, they give them a little bit of an easier time. These guys got the holy hell beat out of them. One guy got his ear cut off and fed to him. It was gruesome. Real gruesome. Saw that one too. All right. So Vladimir Putin spoke out about this terror attack in the days after. And he was fairly resolute in, you know, his determination to figure out who actually did it. And he actually mentioned that they were able to catch these guys, four people, on their way back towards Ukraine. He says they tried to escape. They were moving towards the border of Ukraine. The investigative authority will do everything to identify them. These criminals will specifically to kill our people. We expect that our nations that share our pain to cooperate with us. These terrorists have no nationality. Now, that's a kind of a good thing that he would say that at the end. Because although these guys were attempting to flee to Ukraine, and although they may have been bought and paid for by the CIA, by Putin suggesting that they have no nationality, he's pointing to the fact that it's not an officially state-sponsored action. And so, therefore, he doesn't intend to go after any one nationality as a result. Unlike where after 9/11, we went into Afghanistan and Iraq and bombed the holy hell out of them, even though Al-Qaeda was, of course, also a terrorist nation. However, that doesn't mean that they're not going to strike at the heart of exactly why these terrorists were in Russia in the first place. They did, in fact, retaliate at the Ukrainian Security Service. This is the SBU. And this is the third time in the last 5 days that the Russians have targeted Kiev with hypersonic missiles. And I would imagine that pretty much every single one of these strikes had something to do with the terrorists that were on their way back to Ukraine. Here's something else I did not know. When you're leaving Russia to head into Ukraine, there's actually two borders. You've got the internal border in Russia, and then you've got the external border in Russia. So in between those two borders, you've kind of got like a buffer zone, a no man's land, if you will. And I guess these guys didn't realize that. They thought they were just going to drive right on through and everything was going to be fine. Needless to say, it did not happen that way. So this attack is clearly part of the Russian response, the retaliation for this event that took place that was likely some sort of Ukrainian false flag terror attack that took place at the Crocus City Hall. I also want to remind you, I started this by talking about the CIA and their bases along with the SBU. They basically were running the SBU. So did the Russians take out some CIA operatives that were also working in Ukraine, or were they smart enough to get the hell out of there well in advance of these hypersonic missiles heading into the capital in the West? Russian and Ukrainian sources have reported that the promises made by Vladimir Putin about not targeting the Ukrainian leadership are all now null and void. You know, and I think that that is totally fair game, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, think about how many times the Ukrainians have sent drones directly into Moscow trying to kill Vladimir Putin directly. So from a Ukrainian language television station, we confirmed the information of colleagues that the American ambassador warned at this meeting of the head of office of Ukrainian presidency, Andy Yermak, that the situation with their security and the entire Ukrainian top brass is now under a huge question mark. Earlier, there were rumors that there was a promise from Putin he would not destroy the top of the Ukrainian state. Putin promised the Israeli prime minister, Turkish President Erdogan, Western leaders and sheikhs that Zelensky would not be blown up, which is why Z and Yermak traveled so freely everywhere. Now, no one can guarantee that. Everyone knows Putin is a man of his word. Most likely, he has now canceled his behind-the-scenes promise, and with good reason. So now the entire Ukrainian elite are feeling a bit of heartburn. The first targets are most likely the SBU and the GUR, but let's see who they begin with. Well, it looks like the SBU is who they started with. Retaliation strikes began with Kirilko Budanov's intelligence goons at the SBU, the guys who had the philosopher Dugin's daughter Daria killed in a car bomb, who also killed blogger Tartovsky with the gift bomb, and are also probably the people who set up the Crocus terrorist attack. That was just reported earlier today, so it's obviously going to get worse from here. But the one thing I will say is that this specialized military action has resulted in a protracted, a long, drawn-out combat experience. And if they, the Russians, merely take out all of the heads of the Ukrainian government, well, then there's not going to be anybody left to be giving orders, and perhaps this whole thing can be over. I think it's high time, to be perfectly honest with you, like just cut the head off the snake, if you will, and the body's going to flop around for a minute, but it's not going to be making any more decisions. Now, I will say this. The terrorist attack in Russia reminded me of the situation at our southern border. You know, the Russians are pretty strict on immigration. And I'm certain that those four men who killed all those people at the concert venue, they're going to be worked over pretty well. And every single bit of information that they have is going to be retrieved by the Russian security services. But the same thing is not happening here in the United States. I mean, it's quite obvious that Joe Biden and his regime are allowing for all manner of illegals from all over the world to come through that southern border, and that undoubtedly includes people from terrorist nations and terrorist organizations, including perhaps members of ISIS, which, again, was the brainchild of the Barry Obama administration. So Senator Tom Cotton just yesterday showed up on Fox News Sunday to discuss the very real danger of ISIS attacks on Americans on American soil. The reporter hosting the program asked, "You sit on Senate intelligence. How worried are you about an attack like that on our soil?" He said, "Well, I'm very worried about it. We have millions of Americans who live or travel abroad throughout Europe and Asia, embassies, businesses there. So I'm deeply worried that ISIS from Afghanistan will end up targeting Americans sooner rather than later. Tom, what about right here in our backyard? This is a real thing that could likely happen." Now, earlier this month, we had that illegal alien with ties to Hezbollah. He was arrested at the southern border in El Paso. His name was Basil Ebadi, and he told the authorities, "I'm going to try to make a nice bomb." And we've got so many people on the terror watch list, but it gets much, much worse. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. This was a bit of good news, perhaps not for anyone who was stupid enough to get their babies vaccinated with the clot shot, but the FDA has just admitted that these COVID vaccines lead to significantly elevated risks of seizures in toddlers. Toddlers and children are at an elevated risk of seizure after they've been given the COVID-19 clot shot. This is according to the latest research coming out of the FDA, the type of research you would hope that they would do before they just push this shit onto the population and tell them that they have to take it. But of course, that's not the way this money flow works. The spigot only goes in one direction. And once that money stops flowing, that's when they take a look and say, sorry, our bad. Oops, did I do that? Yeah, sorry, I guess we shouldn't have made you guys take those. So researchers found that children experienced a 2.5-fold increase in febrile seizures within 24 hours of getting the Moderna shot compared to the same children between 8 to 63 days post-vaccination. So there were 88 febrile seizures after the Pfizer vaccination among that same study group. They said in the study, this self-controlled case series that included participants aged 2 to 5 from three commercial insurance databases, the incident rate ratio of febrile seizures was significantly elevated in the 0 to 1 days following the mRNA-1273 administration. Absolute risk was small. So if you can make it past that first day, probably going to be all right. At least you're not going to have a whole bunch of seizures and not be able to contain yourself. But the findings raise quite a few concerns about the safety and efficacy of a variety of different shots, not only these shots, but all of the medicines that they're telling us that we should take on a daily basis or that we should be sticking in our children. They have a variety of very serious side effects, even though they're not being reported. You know, this is an important story. It's an important announcement. But I sincerely hope that it wakes some parents up who until this point have been perfectly fine just having their kids get pricked by a doctor 30 times in a row to get as many vaccines as they possibly can into them. This is a recipe for disaster, and we have absolutely no idea what the long-term ramifications are. Sure, seizures, that's terrible, you know, but at least a seizure isn't necessarily going to kill you. But I'll sure tell you what, it's going to scare the hell out of the parents when you see your, you know, toddler begin to shake and you have to stick a hairbrush in their mouth. Despite that, the FDA and the CDC have not reduced their recommendations for the vaccination schedule for COVID-19 shots to children. And of course, why would you get them anyways? They don't prevent transmission. They don't prevent you getting sick. They don't give you natural immunity. There are so many different reasons why getting these clot shots is just patently awful. It's like the worst thing you could possibly do. And if that isn't bad enough, we have a new Japanese study which urges the full-scale stoppage of all mRNA clot shot vaccines. And that is specifically in regards to something we've spoken about on a number of occasions here on this channel, the fears of contamination of large-scale blood banks. So medical professionals are now, as a result of this Japanese warning, being urged to consider the potential risks that are associated with blood transfusions that use blood products from individuals who have experienced long COVID, which I don't even really think exists, or have been the recipients of genetic vaccines and including mRNA vaccines. This is coming amidst growing concerns over the vast number of unknown side effects that these vaccines may have on the blood long term and the various health risks that are going to be involved with people taking them. This study that is pulling this information was published earlier this month by a group called preprints.org. It was written by a team of researchers that were led by doctors from Asahikawa Medical University from Hokkaido, Japan. And it's ignited a global conversation about the safety of blood transfusions from donors who have received any number of these COVID-19 clot shots. We've talked about this on so many occasions. I mean, like, I'm not comfortable getting it. I had to go. I had labs today. I had to give blood. Maybe that's why I'm so tired. Oh, my God. They took like a pint. I don't even know how much they took, but it was a lot. It was a ton. It was like a whole basket full of test tubes. I was like, that's the most blood I've ever seen anybody take from me. So in this study, they say that these vaccines have played a crucial role in controlling the pandemic, but I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all. Who wrote this? Jim Hoff wrote this? Why would he say that? Oh, my God. So the theory about bad blood as a result of people getting clot shots, it's described as spikyopathy. And it posits that spike proteins in the blood, if you get a transfusion, it could lead to a variety of health issues. I mean, we already know that spike proteins create this sort of environment of inflammation, and that is what ends up leading to people being sick for a long time. But it also leads to blood clots. It also leads to cardiovascular problems. I'm not muted, Debbie. What? I muted you? No, I didn't mute you. No. No, Debbie, I didn't mute you. Hold on. And I know Lisa didn't mute you either. That's really weird. Hold on. Maybe somebody was trying to mute a bot, but I don't even see any bots today. No, you're still a mod. You're still a mod. I don't know what's going on, Debbie. Debbie, I'm going to have to look at it later because I'm going to have to go someplace else. Okay. Oh, Penny. Penny says, Nurse Penny here, don't put anything in the mouth of a person seizing. Roll them on their side, wait for them to recover, call 911. Also, I believe long COVID is actually post-viral vagal neuropathy. Yeah, I think there's something, but long COVID is like the gayest name I've ever heard. And I think that they made that up because they're trying to associate it with all fixed. You fixed it. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, long COVID's not real. People being sick from being hit with a bioweapon, I think that's real. I was sick for a long time. I mean, I told you guys that, but I don't want to say that I had long COVID. Okay, so spikyopathy. What do they got? Cardiovascular problems. Also, a whole bunch of other diseases having to do with your various organs. Post-viral vagal neuropathy also affects flu patients. Lots of attacks on the internet today. All right, so they also reviewed literature that has already been written about a variety of different post-vaccination phenomena, the persistence of vaccine components such as mRNA and lipid nanoparticles in the bloodstream of vaccinated individuals. I don't want those lipid nanoparticles. If I have to go get blood, that would be the worst. Also, they were looking at the various components that are in the blood of these vaccinated individuals and how they can specifically be passed on to people who have not gotten the vaccines. Somebody actually said something in the chat the other day, and I don't know who it was, about how vaccinated and non-vaccinated people, their blood looks the same now, as like saying that people who are vaccinated have essentially passed all of this garbage on to the rest of us. And if you're out there, maybe you can tell us a little bit about it. Well, I don't know what to do if we're all going to get sick because these people are vaccinated. I sincerely hope that that's not the case. Because the idea that you can't protect yourself because it's now an environmental toxin essentially being passed around by people who've been vaccinated, and that's frightening as hell. So KDRJRL79 never got the shot but was hospitalized, had 5 rounds of remdesivir. I had effects for more than a year. Felt like I had long COVID. You had just like general organ failure and body poisoning because remdesivir is poisonous. But there are a variety of possible effects that could come from these new genetic modification shots that are being injected into people. And I seriously, seriously do not want to be around people who have had these vaccines. I think this is something that deserves and warrants a lot more study because this sort of question is just frightening at the heart of it. If people who have been vaccinated become production factories for genetic modifications, and then they go out into the general public and they infect other people with the same sort of manufacturing plants for these genetic modifications, and then everybody starts passing it to each other. You know, who's to say that that isn't going to be the ultimate kill shot? What if that was the point from the very beginning? So I guess the only question to ask here is who's going to do the research, I suppose. It's going to cost money. It's going to require samples from many different people. If anybody can find that information regarding the blood that somebody had talked about the other day. If you can find that and email it to me, I would really appreciate it because I meant to grab it, but I was caught off guard by something else. All right, you guys, we got to take a break for the second half of the show. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Well, bad news. It sounds like the Fed has taken the punch bowl away from the party yet again, because the stock market has been betting on March rate cuts, but not so fast, because all three indexes just got pummeled on the news that rate cuts are off the table. Now, is this why JP Morgan and UBS are calling for a 23% drop in the S&P? Let me tell you something. This is the longest time we've ever had in history between recessions. And right now, that recession indicator is ringing off the hook. Its most severe alarm in that 40-year history. So either you think Bidenomics is working, or you're buying gold. And since we all know Bidenomics isn't working, isn't it time you protected your retirement by getting gold? Right now, you can call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today and do it before it's too late. All you got to do is mention me, Zach Payne, and this show, Red Pill News, on Red Pill 78, and you will always get the best-in-class service from Patriots protecting Patriots. The Patriot Gold Group has the no-fee-for-life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you might be eligible for the no-fee-for-life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and request your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. I was just thinking, back when I was still on YouTube, someone sent me a message one time and was like, you should really stop blinking so much. And I was like, are you freaking stupid? Like, it's an involuntary reaction. How am I supposed to stop blinking? If I'm sitting here thinking about how much I'm blinking while I'm talking, then I'm probably not going to be able to talk. Blinking is actually a sign that your brain is working, that you are thinking about something. So I'm thinking, I'm just not thinking about blinking. And it's not something you should be thinking about either. Have you guys ever seen somebody who just doesn't blink? I don't know a single person who doesn't blink when they talk. I mean, it's just what it is. Some people even close their eyes when they talk. I don't know. Either way. All right. So, this is a confirmation of something that we thought at the very, very start of this, when the whole RNC turnover started to take place. I also suggested that Ronna Romney McDaniel was going to go get a job as a talking head at MSDNC or CNN or something along those lines. And by golly, we got confirmation on both. First of all, yes, she was definitely forced out by Donald Trump because she's such a loser. Second of all, yes, she has gotten a new job at MSDNC. And it looks like she just got her lips done for the very occasion. So she joined MSDNC as a commentator and debuted her new position on Meet the Press. What's really funny is that Chuck Todd was not happy about it. This is his show. And he was like, you guys, I can't believe you hired her. Anyways, she has lost more elections than any other RNC chair in history that I know of. And she stepped down as chairman earlier this month so that Michael Whatley and, of course, Laura Trump, the lovely Laura Trump, could step in as Donald Trump's own personal choices as chair and co-chair to bring the RNC to victory and more align it with America First values. So under McDaniel's leadership, we lost 8 governor's races. We lost 3 Senate seats. We lost 19 House seats. And we had 1 presidential race stolen from us. Back in November, she was confronted about the lack of involvement in variety of House elections, local elections. Virginia Democrats ended up retaining control of the state Senate. They flipped the House of Delegates from red to blue. It was so bad that Susanna Gibson, who is a porn star, who performed online sex acts for tokens, almost lost her or narrowly lost her election to Republican David Owen. David Owen should have won that race by a landslide, but he only won it by that much. So hang on, let's go ahead and see this clip of Ronna McDaniel talking about how she was forced out by the boss. You're fired. Hold on, I might have to refresh. Yeah, I'm going to have to refresh. Yep, force reload. Huh. Wow, nothing's working. Well, her lips are horrible. Yes, they are horrible. I mean, I'm not saying all lip injections look bad, but hers look bad because it's so obvious. She had like these like super thin, like paper thin lips before. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of people do. But Ronna Romney McDaniel had to go out there and get like like Kardashian porn star lip injections that just look so obviously fake. Oh, come on. All right. Well, let's try to go to X directly. No. Here we go.
Right into this and start with your decision to step down as RNC chair. If you can, take me behind the scenes a little bit. Were you pushed out of your role?
Well, there's no question that as RNC chair, you have to remain neutral. And we had a primary process.
Look at those lips.
And so we did have debates, right? We had debates and there was tension and a little friction that started during that process. It was well played out in the media. And I knew at that point when I was doing that role and we were going to have debates that when the nominee came forward and it was likely to be President Trump, that they would want to switch. And that's his right as nominee.
And so were you pushed out by him?
He absolutely wanted me to move aside and wanted Michael Whatley and Lara Trump to come in.
Yeah. Let's dive.
Yeah, the boss shoved me out. I got fired by Donald Trump. Fired by Donald Trump. Hang on, I want to see if maybe they have like an old picture of her someplace. No, no. So many pictures of her new face. Oh, look at when she was natural. Like, this is so much better. So much better. I mean, she is still Mitt Romney's daughter, so. Gosh. Okay. Well, good riddance. We barely knew you, Ronna. Anyways, the fact that she went and joined MSDNC, it shows exactly where her allegiances lie. She was never a Republican. She was always a rhino looking to thwart the efforts of the America First movement. So now that she's gone, Michael Whatley and Lara Trump can come on in there and do business as they need to, support the correct candidates, help us get people in line, make sure that the people who run are supporting President Trump and the America First movement. We've got a lot of work to do. We need to get on that right now. And I take you once again to the news last week that we were talking about with all of these election integrity lawsuits the RNC is bringing in state after state after state after state, ensuring that by the time we get to November, those dirty dog Democrats are not going to be able to cheat. Now, President Trump had another Republican primary. He won in Louisiana. This is a winner takes all state. So President Trump got every single delegate. That was really not a surprise. He won the general elections in 2016 and in 2020. President Trump is, of course, the GOP nominee, so he doesn't even really need to worry about the rest of these races. But everybody is going to continue to vote for him because he is definitely the candidate that we want on the ballot come November. Now, we're going to get into the discussion about President Trump. And first, we're going to talk about President Trump discussing the money that he was forced to raise for his nearly $500 million bond that he was set to pay. Now, on the 22nd, so this would have been, was that Thursday? Before 25, yeah, that would have been on Friday, rather. On Friday, President Trump made it known that he had almost $500 million in cash, which he was going to use if he needed to for his bond so that he could appeal the unfair ruling by Letitia Peekaboo James and Judge Arthur Human Ashtray and Gorin. But of course, the whole thing was that he wants to keep some cash because he wants to use it for other things. He is largely paying for his own presidential run. Yeah, he's gotten a lot of money from the American people, but we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that have to be spent to keep President Trump's train moving. He's got his various organizations. He's got his overall umbrella company. He's got the various Trump victory funds all over the country. He's got the rallies that he has to fund. Every single one of those things costs many, 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 many millions of dollars on an ongoing basis. So the truth of the matter is they wanted to take as much money as President Trump had liquid so that they could deprive him of the ability to use that money to run for president. And of course, President Trump was telling everybody for the last week that he was not going to be able to pay this. And then lo and behold, on Friday, he says, guess what, bitches? I have all of it. I'm ready to go if it needs to happen. So, of course, that sent the left into a tailspin over the weekend. They had nothing else to think about the entire time because Letitia Peekaboo James wasn't going to be able to make a midnight run on a Saturday night. Everybody had to wait until today, this morning. Now, President Trump, of course, if he was forced to use his liquid assets, then that would have put a damper on his ability to continue to run for president at the current rate that he is. He said as much when he went to court earlier today because he was there for the affair with Stormy Daniels, not him having an affair with Stormy Daniels, but this whole sordid affair, this so-called hush money case. So President Trump wrote this on Friday night: through hard work, talent and luck, I currently have almost $500 million in cash, a substantial amount of which I intended to use in my campaign for president. The often overturned political hack judge on the rigged and corrupt AG case, where I have done nothing wrong, knew this, wanted to take it away from me, and that's where and why he came up with the shocking number, which, coupled with his crazy interest demand, is approximately $454 million. I did nothing wrong except win an election in 2016 that I wasn't expected to win. I did even better in 2020 and now lead by a lot in 2024. This is communism in America. Now, of course, we all know that President Trump did nothing wrong. And I think that every single day, more and more American people are also realizing that he did nothing wrong. And by dragging this fight out until the very last second and then letting everybody know, hey, I do have the money. It's just that I had other plans for this money. I don't want to be forced to give all of my money that I have in liquidity right now to Arthur the Human Ashtray and Gorin and Letitia Peekaboo James. I want to use it to run for president because that's why they're going after me. These are all efforts by the Biden regime, sending out individual scouts into these various legal offices, DAs, county attorneys, everywhere they're going after Trump. They have somebody from the Biden regime working there, heading up the pack, ensuring that they have the full help and weight and force of the United States government to go after these people. They're just doing it through a vector. That vector in this case would be Manhattan. That vector in this case would be the state of New York. That vector in this case would be, of course, Fulton County and Fannie Willis. So President Trump wanted everybody to see the persecution that he was going through. He wanted the American people to understand this is what they do to their political enemies. And this is exactly why we have to change things, because this is not a communist country, although that's what they want it to be. This is a republic. We have freedom. We have liberty. We should have many more things, and we should have those first couple in spades. However, every single day that gets chipped away just a little bit more. Real quickly, I had missed a Rumble rant from earlier. T.C. Burton said, if you didn't watch last Saturday's show with Ashton and MH370, you missed Fredo's chats. I was laughing so hard. It was hilarious. Let me also say, T.C. Burton says, Zach, could you explain one day why the RNC had a consent decree limiting the party? They put us so far behind the DNC, I believe it would be involved in ballot security. Yes, I can do that. Warrior Mima, Zach, please explain how Letitia James got the nickname Peekaboo. I just heard President Trump calling her Peekaboo. I think maybe it was those eyes. Like, jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those peepers? I mean, take a look. She's got some big old bug eyes. I think that's why she's called Peekaboo James. Let me actually look it up. Why, why is Letitia James called Peekaboo? I just know I heard President Trump calling her. Why does Trump call Letitia Peekaboo James? Letitia James Peekaboo. Michael Cohen has a theory, and it isn't X-rated or racist. Oh, he says, I think Trump has dementia. Boo. Not real. I don't know if anybody knows, to be quite honest with you. Letitia James Peekaboo. Six theories about Trump's new nickname. Oh, God. Okay. I can't go to this because it's protected by a paywall. He's called her that since at least 2022. Peekaboo James. They call her Peekaboo James. dubbing her Attorney General Letitia Peekaboo James. Trump said she is a total crime-fighting disaster who is spending time fighting for very powerful and well-represented banks and insurance companies who were fully paid, made a lot of money, and never had a complaint about me. Oh, my God. Oh, yes. Everybody's saying it's racist. It's a racist slur. Everybody wants to know, though. You're not the only one. Number one, Indiana Dad says, wear a nicotine patch to counter spike protein. I cut a 7 milligram in half. Dr. Arta says he personally uses 2 to 2.5 milligrams MoHap. I am literally inhaling nicotine virtually the entire time that I'm awake, so I'm okay there. Plus, it's sweet, so it's like I get this candy fix. I don't have to eat sugar anymore. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows, to be perfectly honest with you. I just love it. I love it so much. All right. So I got to circle back to the point that I was trying to make. The exposure and the realization by America that this is a political witch hunt. This is the political persecution of the Biden regime going after their number one political enemy, the man who will defeat Joe Biden in November. It has turned on the regime. It has flipped the narrative on its head. Or as Dana Bash says, the world is upside down because she is simply unable to compute why Donald Trump is leading in such significant figures over Joe Biden in Michigan and in so many other areas. This is, again, a new poll done by CNN where they undoubtedly oversampled for Democrats. And despite that fact, Donald Trump is still beating them in their own poll. They're showing that Donald Trump is trouncing Joe Biden, and likely come November, there will be no hope for the dementia-addled candidate on the Democratic ticket. They can't figure out why America loves Donald Trump, because they're not one of us. They are part of that same elite group of grifters that live in ivory towers in Washington, D.C., and New York, Manhattan, maybe down in Miami. There's a lot of weirdos in Miami. Sorry if you live in Miami. But there's a lot of money down there. There's a lot of rich people down there. And not all of them are Democrats, but you get to these major city centers and you tend to have these rich Democrats coalescing in there in that spot. So Dana Bash can't see it. The elites at these media networks, they can't see it. And I don't think that the Biden regime sees it either. All they are thinking is that these are the same dirty tricks that we normally use, and it always destroys the person we're trying to destroy. But in this instance, every single time, it endears the American public to Donald Trump. Donald Trump wants the people to see how they are trying to destroy him because it helps out with his own personal narrative. It helps expose the truth to the American people who didn't catch on early like all of us did. Leanne 63 says, great show, Zach. Thank you so much, Leanne. So let's go. I want to see Dana Bash have an absolute brain fart trying to figure out how in the world Donald Trump is going to destroy Joe Biden come November.
Yeah, and let's just dig into some of the issues that could turn this race looking ahead in these two.
I'm just going to go on record and say that there are no issues that could turn this race because the worm has already turned. Donald Trump has already won. Joe Biden is a walking dead man, and he just doesn't even know it.
First of all, on abortion and democracy, these are the two issues where Biden has an advantage. The only two issues where Biden has an advantage in both states. Then you look at other issues, U.S. and world affairs, economy, immigration, Israel, Gaza. Trump has an advantage. And it's actually, if you look at the Israel-Gaza question, the fact that Trump has a 20-point advantage in Michigan, I mean, the world is upside down.
I would say, Dana, that the world is right side up for the rest of us. It's been upside down for the real people, the citizens of America and the citizens of the world. It's been right side up for you and your cronies because you had a monopoly on information. You had access to all the power, all the money, all the influence. Well, that shit's gone, Dana. You done screwed that up a long time ago. The people woke up and they walked away. And now they're going to support the one man who's just like them, despite the fact that he's a freaking billionaire. Donald Trump is being persecuted just like we get persecuted. The government goes after us because they know they can crush us. Because one small man is nothing compared to the full weight and might of the deep state-run United States of America. That's why Donald Trump is trying to change things. That's why he's trying to fix things, get back into office, and unravel this Gordian knot. But Dana Bash looks at it, and she says, wow, Donald Trump must be a criminal. He's getting persecuted in the courts. The courts are right. We got to keep going. We got to keep moving. We got to put Trump in prison. And only then the people will see. Only then the people will believe us again. I'll have my credibility once more. Dana, sorry to tell you, you will never have credibility. You never actually had any credibility. All you had was a monopoly on the delivery of propaganda.
That finding probably explains a lot of Joe Biden's troubles in Michigan right now as well. I mean, it's obviously an issue that we saw in the primary where the uncommitted vote against him. We see young voters, independents, people who have been affiliated with this calling for a ceasefire movement, very frustrated with the president and his policies. And so that's clearly partly at play here in Michigan.
Yeah, no question. But
again, the one thing that they cannot point to is that America resonates with Donald Trump. They resonate with the way he's being treated. They'll never allow themselves to see it.
It's hard to imagine that Donald Trump will be any more sympathetic to what's going on in Gaza than Joe Biden is, which is what...
And here, she can't see it either. Donald Trump already brought peace to the Middle East, Dana. Donald Trump already got the Israelis and the Palestinians to stop killing each other, Dana. All it took was 1 week with Joe Biden in the White House and people started dying. This Saturnian death cult returned to the White House. The resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue moved his couch in, and the next thing you know, you got blood running down the streets.
So surprising.
It has nothing to do with their actual policy positions, right? Exactly. Necessarily, or exactly. What he's proposing.
And I just want to say...
Aaron says that guy is getting cholesterol injections. He's probably getting soy injections directly into his backside. So continuing on this point, Fannie Willis, and I know people are always saying it's Fannie, Zach. No, it's Fannie because she's an ass, according to me. Rick Acer says, great work, Zach. You need some throw on stage props, mustaches, sheriff hats, judge outfits when you do those Southern accents. That would be hilarious. I said, I'm with you. All right. So Fannie Willis is also out there digging herself a deeper hole, telling the world that now she's really pissed. Now, since Donald Trump and Michael Roman caught her in her lies, woo-wee, she is coming for him. And she's not going to stop until she gets what she wants. And Fannie Willis always gets what she wants because she's a brat. So she showed up on Saturday night, also on Crap News Network, and she was discussing the recent disqualification hearing against her, the fact that she had to fire her lover, but this is not going to let her slow down the prosecution, excuse me, the persecution of Donald Trump. She said, a train is coming, a choo-choo. I don't know if she actually said choo-choo, but that would have been funny if she did. So the good news about this is Donald Trump and, of course, Michael Roman, they are appealing this ruling by Judge Scott McAfee. And I think there's a good chance that the appeals court is going to see this for what it actually is. Scott McAfee was clearly compromised in this whole thing. Scott McAfee had already donated to Fannie Willis. There is even a possibility he got his judgeship as a result of his relationship to Fannie Willis. Fannie Willis perjured herself on so many different occasions. Here, oh, look at this. Fannie Typha Willis from Scott McAfee, $150. That was to her campaign fund. Once this goes to the appeals process, I think that we're going to see a different situation. Don't forget, the Senate may still stop Fannie Willis. Their investigation is, I believe, supposed to be completed by June. And then, of course, Fannie Willis is facing re-election in November, and she has both a Republican and a Democratic challenger. But Fannie Willis clearly threatening Donald Trump, saying that she's coming for him and everybody else better get out of the way because she's not going to let anything stop her now. Well, except for the inevitability of her own demise, that will definitely stop her before she is able to successfully crush Donald Trump. Now, today was the deadline where Peekaboo Letitia James was coming for President Trump's assets. Apparently, in preparation for that, she sent some notices out to Westchester, where President Trump has a golf course. She was looking at seizing it. But not so fast. Not so fast. Jonathan Turley has his own opinions about whether or not Letitia James was going to be able to do this. Spoiler alert, the whole thing is moot now because of a decision handed down by a judge. But I just wanted to show you these statements from Jonathan Turley. This is why he believes that it was never even a legitimate possibility that Fannie Willis or that Letitia Peekaboo James could steal Donald Trump's properties. He says these properties are partnerships. They have leveraged debt. All of that has to be unraveled. So they aren't just this, you know, like one thing, like Trump owns the whole thing. Trump versus Letitia James. Letitia James comes in and steals his golf course. She comes in and steals Trump Tower. It's a very different equation. In order for Peekaboo James to seize a property, that's got to be pulled into court. There's going to be challenges. Other people are going to file claims against her, try to get it stopped. It's going to get blocked. And then while everybody is celebrating this, you know, it's going to basically be lights out for Letitia Peekaboo James. It's not likely to happen. The other thing is that she's going to be harming the value of the property that she's trying to seize with some of those actions. So although it may be worth one thing at the time she says, hey, give me your shit. It's going to be worth another thing at the end of the day. Klee84JJ, Fanny means front, bum, but in the UK. And from what I've seen, this is a huge see you next Tuesday. Love Wales. That is not England. No, definitely. Wales is very distinct from England. I have Welsh blood, I have Irish blood, and I have English blood. The majority is Irish and Welsh, only a spot of English. Spotted dick, if you will. All right. So the other thing is that Trump, of course, had filed that appeal requesting a stay in the seizing of this $464 million judgment. And by God, today we did get some news. But one more thing about the possibility, the endearment of Donald Trump to the American people. And thank you, Klee, for that donation. Appreciate it. Frank Luntz, a one-time roommate and close associate, if you will, of Kevin McCarthy, also appeared on CNN over the weekend, and he was warning against the seizing of President Trump's properties. He said, if you seize Trump's properties, you are going to elect him. And that means that at least one person in this whole sordid mess, besides me and likely you guys, feel that essentially the deep state is driving Trump right back into the White
House. All right, Frank, the politics of this. Folks in the Biden campaign are already starting to refer to Donald Trump as Broke Don, which is interesting. And then there is the possibility that the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, would have to start or would start seizing assets, maybe even buildings. How do you think that would play?
I want you to remember this moment and don't forget it. If the New York Attorney General starts to take his homes away, starts to seize his assets, it's all going to be on camera. Pundits are going to sit there and scream about this. This man cannot be elected. You're going to create the greatest victimhood of 2024, and you're going to elect Donald Trump. If they take his stuff, he's going to say that this is proof that the federal government and the establishment and the swamp in Washington and all the politicians across the country and the attorneys generals and all of this, that this is a conspiracy to deny him the presidency.
And it is. And it is, Mr. Luntz, Frank Luntz. Oh, bummy boy Frank Luntz. It is a conspiracy. And he's right. It's exactly what's been happening. It's exactly the way this has been playing out. The American people see the attacks coming on all sides, and they know it's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to defraud President Trump, to steal his ability to continue to run for office, because he will win again for the third time come November. But again, by November, it's going to be a very different playing field. We're going to have a bunch of successfully concluded RNC suits against the voter rolls in a variety of states. We're going to have maybe ballot drop boxes pulled off the streets. We're going to have election monitors. We're going to have lawyers ready to challenge. President Trump is running the RNC now, guys. It's not Michael Whatley. It's President Trump. Michael Whatley is President Trump's surrogate. Lara Trump is President Trump's surrogate. He's got the people that he knows are going to do exactly what he wants them to do sitting in those chairs. And finally, we come to the ultimate coup de grace. We have the happiest of all mediums. Donald Trump in the appellate court has won his stay of that nearly half a billion dollar judgment upon him by Judge Arthur the Ashtray Engoron and Letitia Peekaboo James. And they found that he could post a $175 million bond. Now, I don't know if that is in cash in his own money or if because it's a reduced amount, one of these bond companies was happy to go ahead and meet it. Maybe he was able to get a bond company that doesn't operate in New York. Well, oh, you know, now that I think about it, the bond company probably has to operate in New York. Regardless, this appellate court has now said Donald Trump can only pay $175 million. This is now going to be the end of this case because it's going to continue to be fought. Letitia James gets none of Donald Trump's properties, but he gets all of the free press of her and Arthur Engoron and all of the other haters out there saying how they're going to destroy him. President Trump even has 10 days to post this bond. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Letitia James had taken the first steps last Thursday to begin seizing Donald Trump's assets. She was practically salivating at the idea of having her own Trump golf course in Westchester County. This is where Seven Springs is located. I'm not a golfer myself. I've never been to Seven Springs. I can't tell you how nice it is, but just knowing the fact that it's Donald Trump's golf course, I'd say it's probably very lovely. So his legal team filed this appeal, requested the stay. The appellate division of New York's Supreme Court asserted that Letitia James's actions are unconstitutional and granted the $175 million bond. From the order, it is ordered that the motion is granted to the extent of staying enforcement of those portions of the judgment, ordering disengorgement to the Attorney General of $464,576,230.62, conditioned on defendant's appellate's posting within 10 days of the date of this order and undertaking in the amount of $175 million. And of course, This is good news for Donald Trump. His attorneys had argued that the full posting of this bond was a practical impossibility. The argument, of course, even the richest man in the world would have trouble putting together $500 million. So the 5-judge panel ordered the delay of that. And, of course, President Trump also came outside and gave a statement. R.L. Skeeter says, I love your enthusiasm, Red Pill. Thank you so much, Skeeter. I appreciate you, buddy. Lukester says, thank you for all you do to share with us, Zach and Lisa. I've been listening since the early days on YouTube. 2017, 2018. Love you guys. Lukester, I remember your name. Thank you very much for sticking around as long as you have. So President Trump steps out of the courtroom and he says, Judge Engoron has refused to obey the decision of the appellate division relative to the statute of limitations. I'm sorry, he said this on Truth Social, but he did give a press conference. This is a confrontation between a judge and those that rule above him. A very bad situation in which to place New York State and the rule of law. Engoron has disrespected the appellate division and its very clear and precise ruling. He should be made to do so. And at the same time, release the gag order. This is the fifth time in this case that he's been overturned, a record. His credibility and that of Letitia James has been shattered. We will abide by the decision of the appellate division and post either a bond, equivalent securities, or cash. This also shows how ridiculous and outrageous Engoron's original decision was at $454 million. I did nothing wrong. And New York should never be put in a position like this again. Businesses are fleeing. Violent crime is flourishing. And it is very important that this be resolved in its entirety as soon as possible. Thank you. And then in a follow-up post, Trump demanded Letitia James and Judge Engoron explained why he ruled that Mar-a-Lago was only worth $18 million. Judge Engoron and Letitia James should be forced to explain why he ruled that Mar-a-Lago was worth $18 million when, in fact, it's worth 50 to 100 times that amount. How did the Attorney General of the state of New York force this crook, corrupt judge to do that in order to help her narrative and why? I wonder if that will come out in the appellate court. Sue Castellano, 112, says, if the House removes Speaker Johnson, do you think President Trump could be voted in to take his place? I think that he could. But I don't think he would want to at this point. President Trump, I think, is very focused on all of these court cases going on, not to mention his rigorous schedule going to these rallies all around the country and continuing to campaign. So I don't think President Trump would want it at this point. If there was no one else that was put forward, then it's a possibility he would accept it. But I just don't realistically see him as wanting it at this point. And now it's going to be very difficult to get somebody that is like a real America Firster in there, because the very razor thin margin that Republicans have in the House at this point makes it almost impossible to get somebody who isn't like a total milquetoast in there, because they may likely have to depend on the votes of Democrats. So yeah, that's kind of why I didn't talk about it today, because I saw MTG was discussing it, but. I mean, I don't know that it's time at this point. You know, I mean, Congress is already ineffective as it is. So if there was no speaker and we had the speaker pro tempore in there acting in his place, I don't think that they would get anything else done. And I think that they would just end up voting endlessly. I don't think they'd be able to figure it out. But I thought it was so ironic when CNN was suggesting that President Trump could pay for the entire thing just by selling Mar-a-Lago. Well, I thought it was only worth $18 million, Judge Arthur the Ashtray Engoron. So, President Trump, this is President Trump actually speaking outside the courtroom. And let me see. No, that was his posts from earlier. Here we go. He said, thank you very much. Judge Engoron has done a terrible disservice to the state of New York. What he's done is terrible. Businesses are fleeing. You see that we just released a statement on Truth. Businesses are fleeing and crime is flourishing all over the state. And what he's done is such a disservice. Should never be allowed to happen again. New York State is being battered by this decision. So I greatly respect the decision of the appellate division. And I'll post either $175 million in cash or bonds or security or whatever's necessary very quickly within the 10 days. And I thank the appellate division for acting quickly. But Judge Engoron is a disgrace to this country, and this should not be allowed to happen. Thank you very much. President Trump also stepped out of the courtroom to blast the Stormy Daniels hush money case. He called it a witch hunt And the court has set a trial date of April 15th. My God, another one. So ridiculous. Now, of course, Trump and his lawyers are going to appeal this as quickly as possible. They're going to ask for a 90-day delay because I guess they still have to pore over thousands of pages of discovery. But the judge has denied their request. That you don't have a case right now is really disconcerting because the allegation that the defense makes in all of your papers is incredibly serious, unbelievably serious, Merchant said to Trump's lawyers. You're accusing the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and the people involved in this case of prosecutorial misconduct and of trying to make me complicit in it. And you don't have a single cite to support that position. Well, maybe if they would have an opportunity to look at the discovery information, they'd be able to point to something specific. This is all going back to the Stormy Daniels payment. Remember, famous, wealthy people oftentimes are accused of some sort of sexual misconduct or blackmail material. Somebody like Stormy Daniels, a porn star, comes forward and says, guess what? I'm going to tell everybody I screwed you and you weren't very good in bed. And if you don't pay me like $150,000, I'm just going to go out and I'm going to, you know, get paid to tell my story to a star or something like that. Or maybe the National Enquirer. But instead, President Trump bought the story, shut it down. He said, I don't want to deal with this. 150 grand, 125 grand. It's absolutely nothing to me. But the payments made to Stormy Daniels did not come from President Trump's 2016 presidential campaign, as Alvin Bragg is alleging. The payments were made through internal business records. There was no tax deduction taken. There was no obligation to file it with the FEC. And of course, President Trump has pled not guilty on all charges. President Trump was hit with a criminal charge for every payment he made to his former loyal Michael Cohen in connection with those hush money payments to the two women. Alvin Bragg went through the Trump Organization's ledger and charged him down the line per payment to Cohen. Every single payment to Michael Cohen made in 2017 while President Trump was president. It was basically a copy and paste job, the same charge 34 times, and they just switched out the check name or the voucher number. Now, also, you may remember from the indictment, Alvin Bragg didn't exactly explain what he wanted to convict President Trump of in the charging documents. He basically told reporters he doesn't have to tell anyone what the underlying felony is. And I've never seen an indictment read like that. I don't think anybody ever has. So he's allowed to charge President Trump with 34 felonies without explaining what the underlying offense is. And I would say that that is a denial of due process because it makes it very difficult for President Trump and his attorneys, obviously, to build a defense. I mean, what the hell are they defending against? Now, this all comes to a head in this piece right here. The political persecution of President Trump. All of this shows how, without fail, presidents must be granted presidential immunity. Now, of course, there should be some key distinctions to that. If presidents are truly committing heinous crimes or abusing the power of their office, that should not be allowed to happen. But it should not be possible for political opposition to go after someone after they've left the office of the presidency on a variety of trumped up charges for things that simply don't make any sense. So the National Constitutional Law Union, which was founded by John Pierce, recently filed a friend of the court brief on behalf of President Trump for the president's immunity case, which is currently before the Supreme Court. Now, the lawyers for the NCLU argued in favor of absolute presidential immunity. Of course, this is celebrated and supported by a broad construction of unitary executive theory, all of it that qualifies the vesting clause of Article 2. This confers executive power categorically in the president of the United States. Now, it does not grant absolute power in a cabinet secretary like the vice president or the attorney general or any member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and certainly not in an unelected member of the administrative or, as we might say, the deep state, which comprises the sprawling bureaucracy that makes up the federal government, which, of course, should be accountable to no democratically elected office holder. The clause only confers absolute executive power in the president of the United States. However, I take you back to James Comey and his press conference shortly before the 2016 election, when he said that no reasonable prosecutor would bring charges against Hillary Clinton for having an illegal email server in her bathroom where she was stealing emails and putting them on child diddler Anthony Weiner's laptop. No, it seems that Anthony Weiner and Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin, all of them have some sort of absolute immunity. But of course, not the president of the United States when it's Donald John Trump. So the NCLU is supporting President Trump's argument. This has been observed throughout a number of different presidencies in the past, like Alexander Hamilton's. He was one of the most influential founding fathers, and President George Washington's right-hand man. And in the Federalist Papers, it is enumerated. The Federalist Papers is a foundational document written in 1788 to educate a New York audience about the Constitution that judges and lawyers still make reference to today, however, not as often as they once did. I think that people are stepping away from this because they're communists now. But late Antonin Scalia had been a big fan of the Federalist Papers, and it has gained a lot of popularity in patriot circles today. Judges and lawyers who incorporate the wisdom from the Federalist Papers and this document into their decisions and their oral arguments generally find that they look to interpret the Constitution in its original meaning. The people who are not fans of the Federalist Papers like to think of the Constitution as more of an organic, evolving document. These are the people who want to add things to it. A lot like the people in California who have amended the Constitution. Gosh, I don't even know how many times we heard that from Paul Preston over the weekend. But besides just the Federalist Papers, the brief from the NCLU also details that support for absolute immunity is found repeatedly in a number of the most important Supreme Court decisions that happen to deal with the issues of presidential power across the American history. From the most seminal case, which would have been Marbury versus Madison. In that case, the Supreme Court decreed that certain presidential acts can never be examinable by the courts. I've quoted it here on this channel before. Also in Nixon versus Fitzgerald, which held that many presidential acts, including those that are classified within the outer perimeter of office duties, are by their very nature immune from government prosecution. And then lastly, you have history, tradition, and common sense. All of these would overwhelmingly support President Trump's position. Evidence of the former is found in the fact that no president ever was prosecuted for carrying out the duties of his office. Andrew Johnson, Richard Nixon, Bill Clinton, even if those duties were not technically considered official under the law. I mean, Bill Clinton brought a chicken to his office and had her handle a cigar and then stained her dress. Nobody went after him. Bill Clinton also murdered a lot of people, allegedly. And nobody ever went after him. That's the kind of thing I don't think people should be immune from. But President Trump's case, unlike the cases of Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton, the determination of whether Trump's inquiries into the fraudulent election procedures out of Georgia and in other places is a lot more straightforward. The president, of course, as he has said, as we have said, has a duty to enforce the laws of this nation. And election law is definitely part of those laws. The Constitution asks that that the laws of this land be followed. The president takes an oath to the Constitution. Constitution being the framework of our nation would be nothing without law, history, and tradition. And of course, all of that is being overwritten right now as President Trump is being persecuted. So President Trump did exactly what he was supposed to do in trying to get to the bottom of what happened in the Georgia election in 2020. And they're trying to criminalize it in a way that makes it impossible for people to ever question the results of an election in the future. You know, and I consistently go back to the 2000 election with Bush v. Gore. You know, I mean, there was a while there where we didn't have a president. Nobody knew who won. And it's because they were battling it out in the courts. They were trying to count those hanging chads, etc. And of course, that was a snow job with Brenda Snipes. Brenda Snipes obviously working to help get George W. Bush into the White House. I can't say that we would have been any better with Al Gore, but I'm still not convinced that George W. Bush won that election anyways. So considering the fact that election laws are, of course, laws. They require enforcement. They require investigations if things don't look like they are up to par. The Constitution would require that the president would uphold those laws, and his inquiries into the satisfactory obligations of the state of Georgia also fall within that purview. So President Trump was acting legally when he questioned whether or not the election had been stolen or if there were votes that had not been counted. There is nothing illegal about his actions. President Trump also needs to be able to ask those questions without fear of reprisal or legal obligations. And the fact that he did would never have been considered illegal under any other circumstances. If President Trump had not investigated the results of the 2020 election, that in and of itself would have been illegal because he would not have been upholding his oath to the Constitution and to the people of the United States of America. So, again, all of this is going to be decided. I do believe that the Supreme Court is going to see this in the cut and dry nature that it truly is. And once it is put into motion and it is enumerated in this precedent and decision by the Supreme Court of the United States, then when President Trump comes back to office, maybe he can chop a few necks to take care of some of those people who are not following the laws of the United States or maybe leaking all over the Constitution, because I certainly think that that is worthy of his time as well. Huh. Jojo Starbucks says, I heard Kash Patel was behind the Brooks riot during the Bush-Gore appeal. He didn't want the election checked. I don't know. I mean, that was 20 years ago. How old is Kash Patel? I mean, if he's 40 now, then he would have been 16 back then. I don't even think Kash Patel is as old as I am, to be honest with you. So, yeah, neither of them were good. Yeah, I don't think that's correct, JoJo. Tell you what, let's just look it up. How old is Kash Patel? He's 44 years old. So he would have been 20 years old at that time. He would have been in college. He wouldn't have been working in government. Let's see where he went to college. Does it even say? No. He graduated from the University of Richmond in 2002. So he would have been a sophomore in college in 2000. I don't think that he was behind any riots. So you can let them know. All right. So let's get back to this sad, sordid affair trying to destroy Donald Trump. I feel like this was pretty big news that this is now getting coverage. I mean, we've all heard this before. Chris Miller said this early on. But what we didn't know is that he had been threatened by Liz Cheney when he tried to come forward to say, hey, guess what? President Trump definitely wanted the National Guard there on January 6th. Liz Cheney said, we're going to make your life hell if you speak up about this in any greater sense. President Trump, of course, had Christopher Miller as the acting Secretary of Defense, and he said that he was under no illusions. He was feeling threatened by former Congresswoman Liz Cheney and even others on the January 6th committee because he refused to endorse their version of events. He gave an interview to the Daily Mail, and he said he became fearful of their tactics after they tried to stop him making claims that ran contrary to their preferred narrative. Now, according to Miller, the panel were particularly upset by a Fox News interview he gave with Trump National Security official Kash Patel, in which he pointed out that the former president authorized the National Guard to step in to quell the protests that were taking place in and around the Capitol. The two of us were on Fox News, and the next day my lawyer got a call from the January 6th staff director. I forgot exactly who it was, but basically saying, very legalistic, if your client has additional information he wants to share, we'd be happy to have him re-interviewed. So it was more that latent threat of, if you're going to keep going on TV, we're going to drag you in here again for additional hours of hearing and testimony. So that was the nature of the whole thing. He also stated that his view of the committee's vice chair, Liz Cheney, was that she was the person who was running the show. I think that everybody felt that as well. And of course, she would have been concerned about the optics of claims that would have ran counter to her efforts to destroy President Trump in those early days. Christopher Miller also said, I didn't talk about it with anybody else because of the fear or the concern. I wasn't communicating with anybody because I knew any interactions I had on it would result in me having to acknowledge that I'd been in communications with those people. And then that just sort of opens up a whole can of worms and the investigators that I just didn't want to do. So it sounds like he was trying to protect the people around him. It was just much easier not to be involved with anybody or talk to anybody about the stuff because it was going to cause conflict and difficulties with the investigating team. So I didn't talk to other people, quite simply. I am not surprised to learn that Liz Cheney is a real piece of work. And Liz Cheney was always sort of a wolf in sheep's clothing. Dick Cheney is like Darth Palpatine, okay? He's like one of the most evil emperors of the universe. And Liz Cheney really is a chip off the old block. She was just speaking at a New Orleans book festival over the weekend, probably because there was a Republican primary that was taking part there. And it was, of course, an opportunity for her to smear President Trump and to try to destroy what's left of the Republican Party that is being remade in the America First image. She suggested that if we don't stop the Republican Party, then, of course, the world is going to collapse. I believe that we're in a situation where the future of the democracy depends upon making sure the Republicans are not in the majority in the House and in the Senate in 2025. I say that as somebody who has significant disagreements with policies of many of my Democratic colleagues. We can't survive leaders who are going to torch the Constitution. But Liz Cheney, that is exactly what's happening. That's exactly what the Democrats are doing. That's exactly what you did on the January 6th committee. The America First Republicans that are looking to take over the Republican Party would restore the Constitution and would ensure that the antics that people like you and the others on the January 6th committee engaged in would no longer be able to happen. I think that is what's going to save our republic. We're not a democracy. But I think that if we do not prevail in November, then unfortunately, those very, very wicked people are going to have a tremendous head start on us. Now, Amy Berman Jackson, of course, she is corrupt. She has bad decisions. She's consistently presiding over cases that have profound ramifications for the entirety of this nation. She just recently upheld a law which is unconstitutional and very similar to the one that I told you about in the state of New York. This law allows non-citizens and illegal aliens to vote in municipal elections. It's a step closer to allowing those same non-citizens to vote in, say, a presidential election or a state election. Amy Berman Jackson is the judge for the District of Columbia. Of course, she is an Obama appointee. There was a lawsuit that was filed by a conservative group which challenged the Local Resident Voting Rights Act that was passed by the D.C. Council in October of 2022. The law not only allows non-citizens and illegals to vote, it also permits non-citizens to run for office. This is so far outside the boundaries of what the Constitution intended. It was exactly designed to stop things like this from happening. But Judge Jackson says the lawsuit failed to demonstrate how the plaintiffs are harmed by illegals voting or running for office. Well, I don't know. Maybe because they're not citizens of the freaking United States of America. So a federal judge now has tossed this conservative legal group's lawsuit against a controversial Washington, D.C., allowing non-citizens, including illegal immigrants and foreign embassy staff members, to vote in municipal elections. Can you imagine any other country in this world where, say, I don't know, a spy working at the embassy could go out there and vote in a local election? No, because it doesn't exist. Nobody allows non-citizens to vote. It's a 12-page opinion. And she said the plaintiffs, which are a group of U.S. citizen voters represented by the Immigration Reform Law Institute, lacked standing to challenge the law because they could not demonstrate how they are harmed by non-citizens who vote and run for local office. I mean, maybe the fact that if a non-citizen votes, it negates the vote of a citizen. The complaint does not include facts showing plaintiffs' right to vote has been denied, that they have been subjected to discrimination or inequitable treatment or denied opportunities when compared to another group, or that their rights as citizens have been subordinated merely because of their father's country of origin. Their father's country of origin. It's their country of origin. Their identity. They identify nothing that has been taken away or diminished, and no right has been made subordinate to anyone else's. Actually, it has. One vote could be all that it requires to put somebody into an office. One vote is nullified by the vote of a non-citizen who does not have any right to vote, especially if we're talking about a municipal election. That is a much smaller pool from which they're pulling people to cast ballots. So it's even more effective at a local level that illegal people are voting, that non-citizens are voting. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it's getting worse. There should be no surprise in this story, but you know, they've been taking all of these illegals as they come across the border, the ones that they actually come into contact with. And they're giving them court dates, and they say, you got to show up at this time at this immigration court and we'll take care of it when you get there. Well, 200,000 of these such cases were just dismissed by immigration judges because the Biden regime didn't even bother to file the required paperwork. That shows you how bad this problem is right now. There are so many of them. They're simply not following through. But you know who they are hiring to make sure that they can file the paperwork? IRS agents. I'm sure they are also hiring lots of people at the DOJ and plenty of people at the FBI as well. Probably a lot of people at the CIA too. But they're not hiring immigration judges. 200,000 illegal immigrants have just now basically gotten a free pass because there was simply a lapse in the process on behalf of the government. So this is coming from a recent report published by the Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse at Syracuse University. They released this on Monday, and it included data up through February of this year. I think you could say we have a systemic problem in this system that we have here, because if you've got that many cases which are not being followed through on, then that just adds to the effect of all of the others that are already here that haven't even come into contact with governmental officials. These large numbers of case dismissals and what happens raises serious concerns. There's almost also a total lack of transparency on behalf of the DHS regarding why they screwed up. Because remember, failure is rewarded inside the government. Of course, if you fail on the outside in the real world, then you're screwed and you're going to have to basically pick up the pieces on your own. Now, that's if you still get to keep your house or your wife doesn't leave you or something else terrible doesn't happen. But if you work in the federal government, I should just get a job at the federal government, guys. Why am I even doing this? Just get a job at the federal government. I won't have to do basically anything at all. I'll get a job at immigration, probably. I don't even think I'll have to show up. I can just phone it in from home and continue to do the show on a daily basis and probably make a ton of money. I bet you that's what a lot of people have done. If we go back to 2020, listen to how bad this is. 6,482 cases were dismissed because the paperwork wasn't filed. That rose to 33,802 in 2021. It ballooned to 79,592 in 2022. There was a little bit of a decrease in 2023, 68,869. And in 2024, we've had 10,598 so far. Now, you compare that to the period between 2014 and 2020. Less than 1% of the deportation cases were dismissed because somebody screwed up like this. The first 3 years of the Biden regime saw an alarming 8.4 dismissal rate for the same reason. Now, according to this group's findings, DHS only manages to correct the issue for 1 in 4 migrants that are affected. So nearly 2,000 cases expiring a second late filing of NTAs. Jim Kyle says, who has Obamacare? Do you like it? I think anybody who doesn't have a traditional 9-to-5 job has Obamacare, because that's the only way you can get insurance. I mean, I had to go through the healthcare exchange in order to buy insurance. And I have not been happy with the experience, I'll tell you that. They also identify courts in Houston and Miami as having particularly high rates of dismissals, exceeding 50 cases since 2021. So clearly, if you get through, then the messaging is you can probably stay for as long as you want. They'll give you all kinds of free stuff, and you won't have to worry about a darn thing. Now, there was actually an article. Thank you, Two Feathers. Appreciate you. There was another article. Ah, here it is. That I wanted to show you guys. Because this is relevant to people getting in the country and staying in the country. So, here's an illegal alien. He's listing off all of the free stuff that New York City has given him. Let's take a listen.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to have to translate. The guy giving the interview says, how long have you been here? And he says, 2 months. And what do you pay? No, we don't pay. It's totally free. It's the help the state gives us. And what do you receive inside the hotel? Oh, it's good service. I can't deny it. Do they give you food every day? Oh, yes, yes. How many meals a day? 3? Yeah, breakfast, lunch, dinner even. Everything. Then do you also receive insurance for medications? Oh, yeah. They're in charge of doing all that. In fact, they process Medicaid. Do they help you get your asylum? To the process and apply, it's free. They do it. Do you get lawyers, too? Oh, yeah, lawyers also. The Red Cross links us up with them, and it provides free help. And the lawyers are free here too, right? Yeah, the lawyers are free. Right now you have these big bags packed. And where are you going? Well, now we're heading towards. In fact, we asked for the tickets. They gave us free tickets. And they also give it free. And now we're going to Arizona. To Phoenix. And they gave that to you for free? Oh yeah, free. Totally free. The flight is completely free. We're leaving now because here in New York, as you know, it's collapsed. There is a lot of migrants there inside the hotel. Did they coordinate all this? Oh, yeah, they coordinated all of it. Yep. Free, free, free. Free, free, free. And now, since you got here and nobody bothered to pay attention and file the paperwork to kick you out, you get to stay forever. Just bounce from city to city. We're going from New York to Phoenix. And then from Phoenix, we're going to head to Minneapolis. And then from Minneapolis, we're going to head on down to Miami. And then from Miami, we're going to head back into Iowa. They can do that forever. As long as this illegitimate government continues to give them a free airline ticket for a family of 4 every single month, they get free medications, they get free meals, they get free lawyers. Everything is paid for. Yes, Alabama Christian says the migrants are like locusts. The illegals are like locusts. Let me see. Alabama Christian says, another great show, Zach. Thanks for your hard work. All right, you guys, we're going to go ahead and end it there because I wanted to end with this. This is Donald Trump's new ad about Joe Biden's invasion. Let's take a look.
Nobody is going to be deported.
There will not be another foot of wall constructed in my administration.
Period.
And that, my friends, is Joe Biden's America, where the American people are left behind, forgotten, or trampled, and the illegals are ushered in and given free everything so that they can live off the promise that once belonged to your children, that once belonged to me, that's now been stolen that's now been denied. Let me go ahead and pass out these gold pills. Oh, shoot. What am I doing? I gotta read the gold pills. Okay, so thank you to Cyber XP. Thank you to Porpoiseful. Thank you to Netfolks One. Thank you to Sean Joe. Thank you to Sean Joe. Thank you to Sean Joe. Two cookies in a can. Thank you very much, buddy. Thank you to Nakaz 808 for some shades. Appreciate you, brother. Thank you to Sean Joe and Porpoiseful for cookies. Thank you to Good Dog for a pair of shades. Thank you to J2Dank for the cookie. Thank you to Boise Blanc for the cookie. Nakaz dropped a can and says, one problem also seems like we may lose the house once more rhinos step down. If more rhinos step down, yeah. If one more rhino steps down, then we will be at a stalemate. We won't have a majority. That isn't necessarily a bad thing. Means that we'll probably get nothing done, like normal. Thank you to Nakaz, who also says, also, did you get my text about Hawaiian Dem Carl Rhodes and presidential immunity also lost his efforts for DJT off the ballot? I don't think so. Send it again. Also, thank you to Netfolks One for dropping a cookie. And thank you very much to everybody for hanging out with us today. I'm going to go ahead and pass out these gold pills, and then I'm going to get ready for the show tonight at 10:30, if I can just find the stream on Pilled. Gold pills have been released. Good luck. God bless. I'll be live tonight at 10:30 on Baseless Conspiracies. If I don't see you there, then hopefully I'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 p.m. where I am interviewing General Michael Flynn. So interviewing General Flynn live at 5, and then he's going to take off, and then I'm going to do the rest of the show on my own. So please be here at 5 p.m., at least if you're not there tonight at 10:30. Good luck. God bless. I'm also going to release a special interview that I did with Ivan Raiklin in my studio today. He stopped by the house, and hopefully I'll have that out later tonight, or if not tonight, early tomorrow. Peace.
I see your boobs.